I was thinking what to talk about today, and I decided that when I read Acts chapter 13 and verse 22, I believe is the verse I want, I'm going to turn to it. Acts 13 and verse 22. Hopefully all of you know what it says before you ever read it. However, here is a passage where the Apostle Paul was asked to speak when he went out to one of the church's areas, and he got up and gave a sort of a synopsis of the history of Israel. And in doing so, he got down to, verse 21 says that they asked for a king, Israel did, and so God gave them Saul, son of Kish. Well, verse 22, and when he had been removed, when they'd removed him, he raised up to them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said one of the most fantastic things that could ever be said about a man, I think. I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. Wouldn't it be nice if God ever said that about all of us, or all of you, or anybody for that matter? What a marvelous thing to be said about a man. A man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Now you know, and I know, that David had all kinds of problems, most of which he brought on himself, and did some rather horrible things in one sense of the word. But why did God say, "Is a man after my own heart"? Well, there's a very fundamental reason for that, and I think that would be worth trying to outline somewhat. King David, actually, he was anointed to become king by Samuel in 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter. I'm not going through all of that because you know that Samuel went out and checked with all of the sons of Jesse, and when he came out and said none of them is the ones that God chose, he said, "Well, that's all the children you have." And he says, "No, except that runt out there in the field, you know, that's out there keeping the sheep." Now, he was a pretty good-looking little boy because even Saul said that, but he must have been pretty young yet, teenager. And when I say young, that didn't mean he was incapable by any wild stretch of the imagination. I want to cite some of that a little bit. And first, and I'm going to start not where he was keeping the sheep and where he was doing these various things necessarily right off. I want to start where? Better look at my notes and see. 1 Samuel 17. Let's start in verse 31. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 31. Here his father, Jesse, had said, told him to take some supplies, some victuals to his brothers that were at war. And the Israelites were at war with the Philistines at this stage. And I think all of you know the account where David went out there and, "Who is this Philistine out here, this uncircumcised Philistine that takes, that, you know, well, belittles God, and he wouldn't have anything to do with that." That tells you something about this teenage boy, David, keeping the sheep of his father and so forth. I said 1 Samuel 17 and let's see, where do I want to start? Verse 31, I said, we'll start there. Now when the word which David spoke, which were heard, the words that he said, who is this character out here that stands against all of Israel, the army of Israel? He says, when these words were that David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, King Saul. And he sent for him. And when then David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him." That is that Goliath out there, stands out there mocking Israel. "Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, you're a youth. You're just a kid. And he's a man of war from his youth. He's been trained in all of that, and you want to go fight with this man? Big as he is? Well, David had an answer for that. David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it. A lion and a bear, would you do that? He says, and delivered the lamb from his mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Who would take a lion by its beard or by its throat or however you want to say it? The various translations have that maybe just a little bit differently. But who would take a lion with your hands, take a lamb out of its mouth and kill it? Doesn't say he had any weapons that he used. He took the lamb. That's quite a boy, let me tell you. And I read that and I say, in our day and age, that's absolutely impossible. You know, if a bear struck a man with a blow that a bear can hit somebody, would knock him clear into the next state almost. You know, they can really swat. But David killed a bear and a lion? This is absolutely awesome. Verse 36, your bear has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. Where was David's mind? Looking to God. Looking to God. That was on the top of his mind. Now, if he hadn't done that with going out and tending the sheep and attacking a lion and a bear right out there without God's help, I think that would have been impossible, to be frank about it. I don't see how it was anyway, as far as that goes, but then he did it, he says, and I believe God's word. Moreover, David said, verse 37, the Eternal who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he'll deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And he had that confidence to state that right straight out directly. He didn't make any palms about it or any qualms about it. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Now, Saul gave him all that armor and everything, and David said, I can't even put that stuff on. I can't carry all that stuff. So verse 40, then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. I don't know how many of you have ever used a sling to throw a rock. Now, I didn't have much experience with that, but I have seen it done, and I did do it myself. As far as that goes, and let me tell you something, when you have a sling about 4 feet or 3.5 feet long and have a pouch on the end of it and a double string, and you hang on to that thing and you get that thing swinging and you get that peripheral speed of that swing out here and you get that going real good and fast, and when you let that go, that rock is like a bullet. And I mean, it's fierce. You can throw that thing nearly a quarter of a mile if you. I've seen it done. Whenever you swing that thing like that, and that was maybe a very, very lethal weapon. David must have got real good with that thing. There was an account somewhere in history where a man wrote about David, and he said that he could even shoot a live bird right out of the air with that thing. Now, that's pretty accurate, if he could do that. And so, he wasn't only relying on God. He had some skill himself, too. But he gave all the credit to God, of course, which it should be, naturally. And he gave it where it belonged. I think that is an absolutely awesome attitude for a young teenage man to go out and do this. Now, verse 41. So the Philistine came and began drawing near David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. That is, you know, the Goliath's armor bearer. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, saw this young punk coming up there, as far as he was concerned, this young kid, he disdained him, for he was only a youth. Now, I know that's a little bit awkward there. He disdained him. He made fun of him. I have brought the Good News Bible, and as I said, I don't put that much reliance in all of this, but I think it's good to read this part at least, where he where it states what Goliath said, verse 42, chapter 17, verse 42. If I can find it here, I believe I can. Yes. And when he got a good look at David, he was filled with scorn for him, because he was just a nice looking boy. Just a nice looking boy. And he said to David, "What's that stick for? Did you think I'm a dog?" Well, I can go back to the New King James here now. Verse 44, and the Philistine said, "Come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." And David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Eternal." Where was his mind? What were the implements he wanted for implements of war? First thing he said, "You come to me with all of your big spear and all of this stuff," and he says, "I come to you in the name of the Eternal of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Eternal will deliver you into my hands." He had that absolute confidence. He just stated it right there. "And I'll strike you and take your head from you. And this day I'll give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and for the beasts of the earth. And all the earth will know that there is a God in Israel. Then all the assembly will know that the Eternal does not save with sword and spear. For the battle is whose? The battle is the Eternal's. I leave it in God's hands," in other words. The battle is the Eternal's. "And he will give you into our hands." He had that absolute confidence. I think that is awesome. So it was when the Philistine, verse 48, arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried. He didn't just piddle along. He hurried and ran toward the army. Toward the army? You see, this man was standing before the whole army of the Philistines, and he ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Verse 49, then David put his hand into his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead so that the stone sank into his forehead. You know, you take a stone like that in a sling, and if you can hit something with it, that is just like a bullet almost, really. It's when you get a sling going real fast and turn that loose, that stone is really a lethal weapon, I can assure you. And let's see, where am I? Verse 45. Well, no. Verse 49, I guess. I'm in the wrong column here. Then David put his hand in, and he took in and he slung and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. And so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. He didn't even have a sword. He said, "I'll cut your head off." Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him. If he wasn't already dead, he might have still been breathing after he was knocked out with that stone in his head, driven clear into, broke his skull. And he cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw, the army here saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And now the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted and pursued the Philistines and as far as away and killed a number of them after that, after their champion was out of the way, all because of what David did as a youth, as a young, probably, a teenager, 15, 16 years of age or whatever he may have been, I don't know, something of that nature. And I think he was an absolutely awesome man, even as a teenager. Now, he found favor in the king's sight. And so the king decided he was going to keep him. And so I think you know the story. You've read this over yourselves. You know that King Saul kept him, and God's spirit already left King Saul, so evil spirits came, and whenever they would come, why, he would have David play music. So it tells you right off of the bat that David was quite a musician also, if he could play before the king. And apparently when you read about his musical capability that he had and the compositions that he wrote and so forth that are listed even in God's Word, I'm not going into that. That isn't my purpose here, but he was a fantastic musician as well as a warrior and a man of real capability. So he had lots of attributes that were excellent as far as that was concerned. Well, King Saul put him in head of the army. And so when they got into fight with the Philistines, they came back and the women says, "Well, Saul kills his thousands and David his 10,000s. What'd that do to Saul? You see, God's spirit had left him. And he was sort of depending on himself here. And he didn't like that. So he says, "I got to get rid of this guy." I'm saying it, paraphrasing the whole thing, but you can read the story. He was King Saul was got angry at David. David became Saul's enemy. Now, Saul was not David's enemy by any wild stretch of the imagination, because he respected him very highly because God placed him as the king. Again, where is David looking? Looking to what God did. So David would have nothing to do with doing anything that God established. And he obeyed God. He looked to God for strength and help. And I have to believe that God gave him the capability to handle the situation with that bear and with that lion out among the sheep. But he also gave him the capability with Saul and the apostle and David. Even as a young teenager, had that total reliance on God that he would do that, and he hurried to him. He didn't just all apprehensive about whether this guy's going to overtake him or anything. He just knew that God was going to put him in his hands. That's the way it seems to me, at least, that he went there with that whole frame of mind and attitude. Oh. Wouldn't it be nice to have that attitude? That complete reliance on God as David had? Well, that was demonstrated a number of times, and I think that maybe we ought to look at a couple of examples of that. You see, Saul wanted to kill him. Saul wanted to get him. He wanted to kill him, get rid of him. Now, he did all kinds of crazy things, and I'm not going to read all of them. He did some things that David accomplished without even a flicker, can you say, in one sense of the word. But one of the things that he did was he took out his crack troops and went out to kill David. After David, having had a place at Saul's table to eat all of the time, and it came to the point where David became a bosom buddy of Saul's son, Jonathan, and he and Jonathan kept communication all the time, and they knew when Saul was vicious and out to kill David. And so David escaped. He escaped twice whenever Saul he was playing to get rid of Saul's evil spirit. And he thrust a spear at him, and David escaped twice with that kind of a situation, all in the story. I'm not going to read all of that. I wouldn't ever get through any of this if I had to go through all of that. But I want to show the loyalty of that man to what God did in anointing Saul as king. And in order to do that, I want to turn to 1 Samuel 24. And Samuel comes out with 3,000 of his crack troops of Israel. David had a man with a bunch of rogues out here that he had 600 people in his troop. 3,000 against 600, that's 5-1 right off of the top. I think I can even figure that out myself. But in 1 Samuel 24, I want to go to that now. And I'll start here, well, at the beginning. 1 Samuel 24, you see, it happened when Saul had returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, take note, David is in the wilderness of Engedi. Verse 2 now, 1 Samuel 24 and verse 2. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men in the rocks of the wild goats. So he came to the sheepfolds by the road, and there was a cave. And Saul went in to attend to his needs. He went in to relieve himself. He had to go in there, and he had to go to the bathroom. Well, that wasn't a bathroom, but he went into the cave so he would be out of the way and to relieve himself. And David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. They were back in the cave. And then the men, now, you think God might have had a hand in some of this? How is it that right at that time he had to go relieve himself and walk right into where King David and his troops were? Then the men of David said to him, this is the day in which the Eternal said to you, behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hands. Your enemy into your hands. Well, David was Saul's enemy. Saul was not by any chance David's enemy. Don't get it turned around backwards. But he said he'll deliver your enemy into your hands. Well, that you may do to him as it seems good to you. And David arose and secretly cut off the corner of Saul's robe. I read that, and I've read that, and I've read that, and I've read that, and I say, how on earth could a man be in there like that, and just his robe there, and somebody else come along and just cut off a corner of it, and he didn't even know it? Think about that for a little bit. That I think that God's intervention was far more than what we actually think about. Many times. I think God let him be there in that circumstance and not knowing that David was there cutting a corner off of his robe. But that I can't prove that, but that just seems like it has to be to me that it had to be that way. Now, he cut off the corner of his robe in verse 5. Now it happens afterward that David's heart troubled him. David's heart troubled him. Why? Because he cut off Saul's robe. Corner of his robe. Because he cut his robe. The king's robe. He had done that tiny little thing to the king. And he said to his men, "The Eternal forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Eternal's anointed." Ah, who does he look to? God anointed him as king. I dare not touch him, in other words. God can take care of that. That's the way his mind worked. The Eternal's anointed to stretch my hand against him, seeing that he is the anointed of the Eternal. And so David restrained his servants with these words, and did not allow them to rise against Saul. Now, first off, maybe we ought to think about the people that he had following him. And what did they think about this? When a man just puts himself right straight in his hands and he was right out to kill him, why didn't they just overpower David? Now, David had quite a lot of influence, I'll assure you. Because he restrained all of those 600 men right then and there on the spot somehow. And Saul got up from the cave and went out his way. Now verse 8. David also arose afterwards, went out of the cave, and called out to Saul, saying, "My Lord," that's L-O-R-D, my master, in other words, "the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed down, honoring the anointed of the Eternal. And David said to Saul, "Why do you listen to the words of men who say, 'Indeed, David seeks your harm'? Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Eternal delivered you today into my hand in the cave. And someone urged me to kill you, but my eye spared you. And I said, 'I will not stretch out my hand against my master, for he is the Eternal's anointed.'" God put you in that position, then I would be defying God if I intervened. That was the way David looked at it. At least that's the way I have to read that. And then verse 11, he says, "Moreover, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you. Know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you, yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between, let the Eternal judge between you and me, and let the Eternal avenge me on you. But my hand will not be against you." He wouldn't go against God's anointed. As the Proverbs of the ancients says, wickedness proceeds from the wicked, but my hand shall not be against you. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue? A dead dog or a flea? You're going to take me because I'm not going to fight you. Therefore, let the Eternal be the judge. Judge between you and me and see and plead my case and deliver me out of your hand. And so it was. When David had finished speaking these words to Saul, that Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He realized how idiotic he was there. David had him right there. He could have killed him right on the spot. No questions asked. Then he said to David, "You are more righteous than I." I think that's the understatement of the century right there. you're more righteous than I. You see, Saul, the reason he was removed is he didn't obey God in detail. But David wasn't even going to touch God's anointed, though he was his enemy. For you have rewarded me with good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil. And you have shown this day how you have dealt with me. For when the Eternal delivered me into your hand, you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go safely? That seemed incongruous even to Saul, the King Saul. Therefore, may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to this day. And now I know indeed that you shall surely be king. In other words, why did he bring that up? That's why he was after him in the first place. Because he had heard along the way that David was going to be anointed and be the king of Israel. And he was the king of Israel. He wasn't going to stand for that. But he saw David completely yield to him. And so he recognized that right there. And that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand, as it certainly was. And now there's no question about that. Therefore, swear now to me that by the Eternal you will not cut off my descendants after me, and so forth. And so he let David go now and quit chasing him at this stage. But the enemy doesn't give up easy. He wouldn't give up on this. Whenever the evil spirit would come upon him, he would get angry at David and he'd go out to kill him again and again and again and again, all the times he could. And so we go over to chapter 26 and we see another case. I think it's worth looking at. Here, David spared Saul's life and he had him right in his hands. And yet here comes Saul out after him all over again. 1 Samuel 26, verse 1. Now the Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is David not hiding in the hills of Hachishah? I can't even say it. And forgive my pronouncing of these names, but... and opposite of Jeshimon. Then Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel. He had these 3,000 soldiers, troops, if you please, with him to seek David in the wilderness. And Saul encamped in the hill. Must have gotten out there in the evening, and so they decided to bed down for the night. And they encamped in the hill of Hachiliah, which is opposite of Jeshimon, by the road. But David stayed in the mountains, and he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul had indeed come. He wanted to find out absolutely for sure that it was Saul there in this troop before he did any action. So David arose, came to the place where Saul had encamped, and David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. And now Saul lay within the camp, and the people encamped all around him. All of these 3,000 troops all around Saul. Now, how could that be? Man walks right into a troop, into a whole troop of 3,000 people, and nobody sees him at all. Well, we read on. We'll see how it can be. David answered and said to Ahimelech and the Hittite and to Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp?" And Abishai said, I'll go down with you. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp with his spear stuck in the ground at his head, and Abner, the one that's supposed to be the captain or the chief of the whole army, that's right there to protect him, was asleep there too, lay all around him. And then verse 8, then Abishai said to David, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now therefore, please let me strike him. David wouldn't. Let me do it. At once with the spear, right in the earth. And I'll not have to strike him a second time. I'll do it right the first time. And David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Eternal's anointed? You see, you're defying God if you try to do that, to kill the one that God set as king. And couldn't be guiltless for that. David said furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him. God will take care of him. Just leave it alone. Or his days will come for him to die. Or he shall go to battle and perish. Verse 11, the Eternal forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Eternal's anointed. But please take now the spear and the jug of water that is by his head, and let us go. How could they do all of that? And nobody, out of 3,000 troops in there, nobody even saw them even take the spear from the king's head, right at the, above his head, and the jug of water, and go out of the camp. Well, it tells us here if we just read it. And verse 12, so David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away, and no man saw or knew it or awoke. For they were all asleep. Why? Because a deep sleep from the Eternal had fallen on them. In other words, God intervened for David again without a question of a doubt. God could put a deep sleep on them so they wouldn't wake up. He could have done anything. He'd have trampled on them and they wouldn't have known it. It was a test for David too, wasn't it? Will you spare the man that's out to kill you? Even though you have a helper there that wants to do the job? Yes, David wouldn't touch God's anointed. And he trusted God. Now David went over to the other side and stood on the top of the hill. Verse 13 says, afar off, a great distance being between them. And David called out to the people and said to Abner, the son of Ner, saying, do you not answer, Abner? Then Abner answered and said, who are you calling out to the king? And so David said to him, Abner, are you not a man? And who is like you in Israel? You're the leader of the whole army of Israel. Why then have you not guarded your lord, the king? For one of the people came in to destroy your lord, the king. This thing that you have done is not good. You, as the Eternal lives, you deserve to die, verse 16 says, because you have not guarded your master, the Eternal's anointed. He always brings that up. Saul was the Eternal's anointed. There I'd be defying God if I went against him. And now, see where's the king's spear is and the jug of water that was by his head. He must have felt awfully small about that time, the captain of the whole army of Israel. And Saul knew David's voice. Now, Saul knew that. He recognized David's voice. And he said, is this your voice, my son David? And David said, it is my voice, my master, O king, and my lord. The lord is in the small letters there. And he said, why does my lord thus pursue his servant? For what have I done? for what evil is in my hand? Now therefore, please let my lord the king hear the words which I speak of his servant. And the Eternal has stirred up you against me. If the Eternal has stirred up you against me, which God didn't, of course. It was the wrong one. It was the wrong God that stirred up his evil against David. Let him accept an offering. But if it is the children of men, may they be accursed before the Eternal. For they have driven me out this day from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. Now, David, of course, wouldn't do that. So now, because he repeated over and over and over again, this was God's anointed and God doing it. So now, do not let my blood fall on the earth before the face of the Eternal. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a plea, as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains. Then Saul said, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I'll harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly. Well, did David come to him again? He couldn't trust this man. He knew that. Then David answered and said, here's the king's spear. Let one of your young men come over and get it. And may the Lord repay every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered you into my hand today, but I would not stretch out my hand against the Eternal's anointed. Now he wouldn't touch, because he wasn't going to defy God. He wouldn't touch, he said, the Eternal's anointed, whom Saul was. Samuel was told to select Paul, and he anointed him as king over Israel. And David knew that, and he was going to honor him to the day that he was out of his hands, even though he had been promised that he would become the king of Israel. He knew that from the time that he was young. And he went through all of this. Now, I don't know how many years were involved here, but he had to be 30 years of age when he took over as king finally. Because he spent 40 years as king of Israel, and when he died, he was 70. So that's not too hard to figure out. He had to be 30 years of age when he took over as king. So from the time that he was this teenager, and the apostle, I get Apostle Paul and Saul mixed up here, I guess, but Saul, King Saul, from the time King Saul was out to kill him, from the time he was a teenager, till he is age 30, he had to run, and he went through all of this. I'm not going to read all of the accounts of it, because chances are you can read all of this in here and see the tremendous things that David went through. But he never would attack the Eternal's anointed. He would not go against God. God blessed him wherever he went, gave him and his troops the city that was burned out, and they took his wife and children and all of those, and he had to go out and he captured them and at God's saying, because he inquired of God to see whether he should do this. Over and over and over he did that. If you want a couple of those accounts, I have some of that too. 1 Samuel 23, verses 2 and 4. He inquired of God, should I do this? Or should I do that? And in chapter 30 and verse 8, again, 1 Samuel 30 and verse 8, again he says that. 2 Samuel 21 and verse 1, I don't need to name any more, I don't think, where David inquired of God always, should I do this, should I do this? And God gave him the answer. That is awesome too. You see, back in the Old Testament times, God met with certain people. At least he gave them the answer, mainly probably through his prophets. But he did. He gave him the answer directly. and told him that he should or he shouldn't go out against these people. And when God told him to do that and he obeyed, he had full confidence that God would carry it out just as he said he would do it. That is, I think, fantastic as far as the man is concerned. He should he could see that whenever God said to do it, he would accomplish it. He would accomplish it. It was going to be done. There was no question about it. No fail, ever. He knew that God wasn't going to fail. I thought that was very interesting. I was going to read one account just to show some of the difficulty here. You see, Saul finally was at war, and he and his three sons were killed. Now, there's an account there that is a little sticky sometimes for people, and sometimes we have questions about some of that. In 1 Samuel chapter 31, right at the beginning, it says, Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Now, David and his troops were away from here. He wasn't involved in all of this. He was in another land out away from all of this at the time. He didn't know it was happening. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchisha, Saul's sons. The battle became fierce against Saul, verse 3 says, and the archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not. This was the king. He wouldn't do it, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell on it. Now, did it kill him? We have to read on to see, because it says, and when the armor bearer saw that Saul was dead. Yes, he was dead. He also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul and his three sons and the armor bearer and all these men died together that same day. But there is an account over here in chapter 1 of, I believe it is right here if I remember correctly, in chapter 1 of 2 Samuel. Now, it came at the beginning. It came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had stayed 2 days in Ziklag. On the third day, behold, it happened that a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and his dust on his head. So it was when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. And David said to him, where have you come from? And he said to him, I have escaped from the camp of Israel. So David said to him, well, how did the matter go? Please tell me. And he said, the people have fallen from the battle. Many of the people are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his sons, are dead also. David said to the young man who told him this, how do you know? How do you know that Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead? And the young man who told him said, as I happened by chance to be on Mount Gilboa, he doesn't say when, but as I happened to be there, there was Saul leaning on his spear. Is that what it said over here where I read in chapter 31? where he asked the armor bearer to kill him and he wouldn't. And Saul laid, Saul took a sword and fell on it in verse 3 or verse 4. Saul fell on his own sword. But leaning on his spear, and indeed the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. Now when he looked behind him and saw me and called to me, and I answered, "Here I am." And he said to me, "Who are you?" And I answered, "Well, I'm an Amalekite." But up here we read in verse 6 where Saul and his three sons and the armor bearer and all of his men died together that same day. All the men around him there died in that battle. And what about this now? This guy was really seeking the good side of King David. He was trying to worm his way in here. He said, "I'm an Amalekite," and he said to me, "Please stand over me and kill me." Verse 9 says, talking about Saul, he says, "For anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me." So I stood over him and killed him. Now, is that how he died? We read the account right over here where he died. He fell on his own sword, and the armor bearer saw that he was dead, and then the armor bearer fell on his own sword and killed himself. What is this story then? Well, that's all it is a story, obviously. Both can't be true. And so, which one is the story? Now, David got this directly from this man. You know, God gave David almost supernatural capability to see right through a situation. And he saw through this one too. Now, but he didn't name it in the way that I'm saying it here, because the man says here in verse 10, "So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he would not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown from off his head and the bracelet from his arm, and I brought them here to my Lord, to you, David." Therefore, David took hold of his own clothes and tore them. And so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and Jonathan, his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And David said to the young man who told him, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Well, I'm the son of an alien, an Amalekite." And David said to him, "How was it that you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy the Eternal's anointed?" There's that term again. Saul was Eternal's anointed, and you killed him? You admit you killed him? Then David called one of his young men and said, "Go near and execute him." And he struck him so that he died. He didn't get his wish of giving David the king Saul's crown and his bracelet and all of that. He gave that to him, but he didn't get what he was after. He didn't get on the good side of David after all. David saw right through his plot somehow. And David said to him, "Your blood is on your own head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying that I will kill the Eternal's anointed." And David lamented for this with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Now, I just thought I would explain that, because the account over in Chronicles also says that he fell on his sword, and the armor bearer says it's a parallel account to this. I don't think I need to turn to that and do it. I'm out of time now anyway. But you see, all I want to point out is the absolutely awesome reliance on God that David had. Now look, David made all kinds of horrible mistakes. He even killed Uriah, had him killed, and took Bathsheba in adultery. And yet God says, "Here was a man after my own heart." How is that? David was willing to repent and ask God's forgiveness for his mistakes. He did all of this. Now, I wanted to go to, and I think I will touch that just a bit, 2 Samuel, the 10th chapter. Wait a minute. Let's go over to Chronicles. I'll go over to 1 Chronicles, the 19th chapter. 1 Chronicles, the 19th chapter. Here is the account where David was going to be good to one of the neighbor kings there because he had died, and his son came to reign in his stead. So he went to his son and told him how sorry he was for his father, and his son rebuked his servants that came there, and he saw that he just muffed it when he insulted King David. And so verse 6 of 2 Chronicles 19 and verse 6 says, when the people of Ammon saw that they had made themselves repulsive to David, Hanan and the people of Ammon sent 1,000 talents of silver to hire for themselves chariots and horsemen from Mesopotamia, from Syrian Maacah, and from Zobah. Now, verse 7, and so they hired for themselves 32,000 chariots. You know, when David finally turned it all over to Solomon, and he had all of that glory and all of that capability, and his, you know how many chariots he had in his? 14,000. Not 32,000 as he hired here. This is an absolutely almost unthinkable number. Now, I don't know, it doesn't say here, but commonly the way they did that is they had the leader of 1,000 in their army ride in the chariots. Now, I don't know that that's true with these 32,000 chariots, but there was a horrendous number of people here that were hired to go out against Israel, because they were going to overwhelm them if they had to just walk in and let them mow them down and still keep walking. But they didn't do it. God gave them all gave all of these enemies into Israel's hands, and they escaped. Now, they don't give up easy. So they had to go at it again. I think it's verse 13 down here or so. Verse 16 says, when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they sent messengers to Syria, where they were beyond the river, and Shobhar, the commander of Hadadezer's army. Apparently that Shophak must have been the general of the most awesome army in all the world in those days in Mesopotamia, or Syria, Assyria. And they said, well, we'll get the big army out against Israel. And when it was told David, verse 17, he gathered all Israel, crossed over the Jordan, and came upon them, and set up in battle array against them. And when David had set up in battle against the Assyrians, they fought with him. Then the Assyrians fell before Israel, and David killed how many? 7,000 chariots and 40,000 foot soldiers of the Syrians, and killed Shophak, the commander of the army. There went the greatest army in all the face of the earth, probably in that day, as far as history tells about it. You know, there's a void in history, in the Assyrian history. If you go into the history books and look for this little passage in here at this era of time, the time when after King David took them over, and then during that period of Solomon's reign, there's a little void in history because they were shut down. And David conquered them. Now, if he conquered the most powerful army in all of the face of the world, where did the rest of the nations look? They were all scared of him. Nobody would dare ever attack the army of Israel anymore. So they all conceded. They all gave in. Now, don't get me wrong. They traveled over the world in those days, too. And that account is in the Bible. I've given sermons on that, where they traveled all over the world. And there were kings all over the world that were willing to pay tribute to King David. How did he treat them? I'm awesome. I am awesomely struck by that every time I read that passage, because David was just about like Israel has always been. We've won war after war. And what did we do with Japan when we run the war over there? General MacArthur went over there and befriended them. He didn't mistreat them and go in and slaughter all of them and kill them all off. They became subject to him at that stage. Now, I'm talking about back when World War II ended, because I remember it. I was there. I wasn't in Japan, but I was in the Army in World War II when Japan surrendered. And there were people that thought he should never have done that, but he did. And the people of Japan were mighty thankful, because they were beaten down. No question about it. And they were willing subjects then at that stage. That's the way all of the nations of the world were, apparently, to King David at this stage. That's how great that man really was. Now, he turned that all over to Solomon. Now, Solomon, in addition to having the most fantastic army in all of the face of the earth, also had the wisdom that God gave him. So nobody on the face of the earth, that was what it was called, I call it at least, the golden era of Israel when Solomon reigned. And I'm not going into that at this time. That'd make a sermon in itself to go into some of the things that Solomon did and all of the people that came to him in all the various ways. But he had all of this advantage. It was all turned over to him from the start. But then he had the wisdom to handle it, because nobody on earth could come to him and ask him questions that he couldn't answer. Absolutely awesome. And so at that period of time, in that one little era, until Solomon went all haywire, and then things all fell apart, you know, with the history of Israel. But during that little period, I sort of call it the golden era of Israel. They were the leaders of all of the world right at that one little period of time. And everybody on earth, now, of course, hundreds of them sent princesses to Solomon. And unfortunately, he was stupid enough to take them as wives, and he had 500 princesses as wives, and that was his downfall. But that's not my subject here. The subject here was to see how great King David was in order to literally conquer the whole world, can I put it that way, to bring them all into subjection under him. And so it was at that time. Now, you don't find this in the history books. You find this in this history book, and that's all. And the history themselves, the history books don't ever tell you that. They do tell you about the time period when the Assyrian army was down to practically nothing. Now, I wish I could go on and on. You know, I can just barely scratch the surface on all of this stuff as far as that goes. And I wanted to give you the one most important thing about it all. David gave God the credit for it all. And it was God who won the victory. That's the way David looked at it. And I think that that is a lesson that all of us ought to recognize. We need to trust God in the way David trusted God. Think of the man, the awesomeness of the man. Yes, he made his mistakes, but when he died, he was claimed to be the man after God's own heart.